Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. With some time over the weekend, I read more deeply into the Mueller report and into some detailed press accounts. And since there are so many and varied threads in there, I thought I would pick out just a few of the details to read to begin the program today, some of which may not have made the press coverage that you saw. And I'm going to rely for this on the Washington Post's very good and very readable annotated version of the Mueller report. So here's a handful of items in brief that you may find interesting or new to you. One of them that the Post calls Donald Trump Jr.'s direct interaction with WikiLeaks during the 2016 campaign. And just a little snippet of this says, on October 12, 2016, several days after WikiLeaks began publishing emails hacked from Clinton campaign manager John Podesta's account, WikiLeaks wrote Don Jr. saying it was, quote, great to see you and your dad talking about our publications. Strongly suggest your dad tweets this link if he mentions us. 2 days later, Trump Jr. tweeted the link. So that's one. Another one, special counsel investigated Sessions but couldn't prove he had committed perjury. Remember why he recused himself? Because he said things under oath that were questionable. So here's how the Washington Post excerpts that. It says, the Mueller team found evidence that Attorney General Jeff Sessions had not only met with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak during the campaign, but that the two had discussed the presidential race on at least one occasion. But investigators concluded that the false statements Sessions made in congressional testimony about those contacts were too narrow or imprecise to prove that he had committed perjury, the crime of perjury. The decision is outlined in a section of the report that makes clear for the first time how much scrutiny Sessions faced from the special counsel over interactions that ultimately forced him to recuse himself from the Russia probe, triggering Trump's fury. It says, despite three meetings with Kislyak in 2016, Sessions testified during his confirmation hearing in January 2017 that he, quote, did not have communications with the Russians during the campaign. Remember when Al Franken was questioning him on that? And he said he, quote, did not have communications with the Russians during the campaign. Well, even though his statement was not true, the Mueller report said, investigators lacked evidence to prove that he, quote, gave knowingly false answers to Russia-related questions in light of the wording of the questions that he faced from lawmakers. This says, in his meetings with investigators, Sessions said that he thought he had been asked narrowly about interactions with Russians that involved the exchange of campaign information specifically. The special counsel found that explanation plausible. Next one, kill the story. Trump's anger over a Washington Post column rattled Michael Flynn. And this says, and of course, remember, Flynn got wound up pleading guilty to lying to the FBI about discussing sanctions with the Russian ambassador after the election. And it says, Mueller traces Flynn's decision to lie and obfuscate back to a phone call Flynn had with then-Chief of Staff Reince Priebus about Washington Post writer David Ignatius's January 12, 2017 column, so during the transition, noting that Flynn and Kislyak discussed sanctions on the same day the Obama administration announced new sanctions. Flynn was told by Priebus that the president wanted Flynn to, quote, kill the story, referring to the Ignatius column. Rattled, Flynn, quote, felt a lot of pressure and directed his aide, KT McFarland, to call Ignatius and, quote, inform him that no discussions of sanctions had occurred. Trying to contain the fallout, Flynn insisted in the coming days to officials that no discussions of sanctions had occurred, including Vice President Pence and then Press Secretary Sean Spicer. But instead of containing the situation and his standing, Flynn inflamed it. The report says his lies to others in the administration, quote, alarmed senior Justice Department officials who were aware that the statements were not true. All right, another one. White House counsel said Trump's original memo on firing Comey should not see the light of day. As we move further into the obstruction force portion of the report. And this says, when Trump told his aides that he planned to fire Comey on May 8, 2017, White House counsel Don McGahn and Deputy Utah Dillon urged the president to let Comey resign, but Trump was adamant that he be fired. The group discussed whether Rosenstein and Sessions, Attorney General and Deputy Attorney General, could provide additional arguments for firing Comey, and the president agreed, asking Rosenstein to write a memo and insisted he wanted it first thing the next morning. Trump urged Rosenstein to include in his memo that he, Trump, was not personally under investigation in the Russia probe, but Rosenstein said the Russia probe was not part of his logic for feeling Comey had engaged in improper action. Trump said he would appreciate it if Rosenstein, quote, put it in anyway. So Trump asked Rod Rosenstein to lie in a Justice Department official statement about Comey. Notes that an aide took on the discussion indicate that the White House counsel's position was that the president's original termination letter for Comey should not see the light of day. In other words, what Trump wrote should be buried after asking Rosenstein to put stuff in there that wasn't true. And then Mueller concluded Trump fired Comey because he wouldn't clear him in public. So there's that. Another one. Trump tries to have Mueller ordered not to investigate him. This one hasn't made the news much. Trump tries to have Mueller, this is my summary of it, Trump tries to have Mueller ordered not to investigate him. Former Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski, a confidant of Trump, was told by Trump on June 19, 2017, to deliver a sharp message to then-Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Meet with a special counsel to limit its jurisdiction to future election interference, rather than focus on the 2016 election. Remember, Sessions had recused himself by then, but Trump asked him, Trump asked Corey Lewandowski to convey a message to Sessions, who was recused, meet with a special counsel anyway, to limit his jurisdiction to future election interference rather than focus on the 2016 election. So Trump tries to have Mueller ordered not to investigate him, but Lewandowski never did it. On the Trump Tower meeting, the famous Trump Tower meeting, presidential lies but no obstruction, Mueller finds. This is central to one that everybody knows. The report says Trump repeatedly directed aides not to disclose emails about the June 9th meeting at Trump Tower between senior campaign officials and Russians, and then dictated a misleading statement about the meeting, rejecting a proposal from his son, Don Jr., quote, that would have acknowledged the meeting was set up for campaign material. Additionally, Trump's attorneys and aides gave statements that were not true about the meeting, and the president drafted a statement that was not truthful, even though his son suggested a more honest answer. So it's new that Don Jr. was wanting to just tell the public what that meeting was about, but that it didn't amount to anything in his telling, which Mueller, by the way, seems to have confirmed that that meeting at Trump Tower really didn't lead to anything much. And Trump Jr. was ready to go public with the truth, but not his father, the president. The special counsel report says, quote, the evidence does not establish that the president took steps to prevent emails or other information about the June 9th meeting from being provided to Congress or the special counsel, differentiating between lying to the press or the public and obstructing justice. So that's a big one. Trump himself overruled his son, who wanted to be truthful, and made up stories about the real reason for that Trump Tower meeting. But the fact that he didn't direct that it be said to Congress or to the special counsel, made it not obstruction of justice, just a political lie to the public. All right. Couple more. Trump told McGahn to oust Mueller and then pressured McGahn to deny it. Trump urged White House lawyer Don McGahn to oust Mueller on June 17, 2017, according to the Mueller report. Trump later told his lawyer to deny news accounts that he did that, even though McGahn recounted that the president did want to fire Mueller, according to the Mueller report. And the report says, quote, each time he was approached, McGahn responded that he would not refute the press accounts because they were accurate. So on that one, Trump tried to get Don McGahn to lie, his White House counsel, but McGahn refused to lie on the president's behalf. On political pardons, this one was new to me yesterday when I read it. Manafort tells Gates not to plead guilty because Trump is, quote, going to take care of us. And it says, after a grand jury indicted former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort and deputy campaign manager Rick Gates, Manafort told Gates that it was stupid to plead because he had spoken to the president's personal attorney and they were, quote, going to take care of us. Gates, who cooperated with Mueller, told investigators that Manafort told him, after speaking with Trump's attorney, he thought they should, quote, sit tight and, quote, will be taken care of. Gates added that he asked Manafort outright whether anyone mentioned pardons, and Manafort said no one used that word. But the report says, this is Mueller's words now, evidence concerning the president's conduct towards Manafort indicates that the president intended to encourage Manafort to not cooperate with the government. The president's comments also could have been intended to continue sending a message to Manafort that a pardon was possible. So those are a few Mueller report details that that I thought you might find interesting or new. And again, with credit to the Washington Post, which did a very good and very readable annotated Mueller report that's on their site. And as you've been hearing in the news, Democrats are now facing a decision with those behaviors and others on whether politically or morally they think an impeachment inquiry is warranted based on some of the more serious of those Mueller findings. But here's another takeaway from one of the guests we're about to bring on, David Marcus from The Federalist, basically that the thing few people are talking about from the Russia investigation is Russia. David wrote an article after reading the report called "The Bombshell in the Mueller Report is Russia's Social Media Campaign." And the article says much of the information it presents was already known, but seen summarized by Mueller, what they achieved, what Russia achieved, was astounding. Conducted by the Internet Research Agency, or IRA, a Russian government-backed social media troll farm, the extent and reach of the operations is astounding. Collectively, the report says, quote, this is quoting the Mueller report, the IRA's social media accounts reached tens of millions of U.S. persons, it, unquote. It also controlled Facebook groups such as United Muslims of America, that was really Russia, that had 300,000 followers when it was shut down in 2017. In total, the report says at least 29 million and perhaps as many as 126 million people were reached by the propaganda campaigns. The danger of this, writes David Marcus, is not merely that the propaganda might help determine the outcome of viewers' voting decisions. What is far worse, he says, is that on that scale, the Russians can make fringe, divisive positions and rhetoric appear to Americans to be, if not mainstream, at least vastly more prominent than they really are. And with that, we bring in our first two guests. David Marcus is New York correspondent for the conservative publication The Federalist. He is also the artistic director of Blue Box World, a Brooklyn-based theater project, as some of you theatergoers may know. And Amelia Thompson DeVoe, senior writer for the political data site 538, including her column The Trump Docket, which tracks constitutional questions involving Trump and his administration and what they mean for presidential power. They are both first-time guests on the show. Amelia and David, thanks for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much.
And listeners, our phones are open for any details you have come to focus on from the 448-page Mueller report or any press accounts of it, or questions for our guests, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9673. 9-2. David, I agree with you that the Russia portions of the Russia investigation have kind of taken a back seat to the Trump portions. Why did you key on the Russia aspect in particular?
Well, I keyed on it because I've been paying attention to it for a while. I had the opportunity to be at the National Security Seminar last summer at the Army War College, and it was very clear to me that both the military, the Defense Department, and intelligence agencies are very worried about these social media informational attacks, in part because the First Amendment and American freedom makes it very, very difficult for us to do anything about it. In other countries like Russia and North Korea, they just shut down sites or they shut down the internet or they kill journalists. These, thankfully, are not defensive options that we have. Meanwhile, the social media companies themselves don't seem to have many very good answers for this. So the problem is really on both sides. Both the Democrats and the Republicans are ignoring this. The Democrats, because they have this laser focus on Trump, and if it doesn't have to do with Trump, they don't seem to care much about it. And the Republicans, because they view any talk, at least many of them view any talk of Russian interference as an attempt to delegitimize Trump's presidency and say Hillary Clinton didn't really lose, Russia had their thumb on the scale. So I think both sides need to get out of this mindset and really try to work together to find some answers, because there's no reason to believe that this is not ongoing and that it won't be just as much a problem in 2020 as it was in 2016.
So relating it back to Trump, on, you know, what you focused on, with as many as 126 million Americans maybe having been exposed to Russian propaganda via social media during the campaign, and we know from a couple of the excerpts I read and from a lot of other stuff that Trump and his son and others encouraged Russia within the bounds of the law, according to Mueller, on anything that would help them to win. Encourage Russia, encourage WikiLeaks with the Russian material. Considering how seriously you take the Russian threat, how much are you troubled or not by what Trump and his folks did do?
I'm troubled by some of it, but it's not clear to me that the focus of this effort was really to make Donald Trump president. One of the things that we also see in the Mueller report is that the IRA, the Internet Research Agency, had two candidates that they wanted to support. It was Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders.
Well, primarily they wanted to, I agree, and that the Sanders portion is interesting. I almost included that in my excerpt, so since you cited it, the goal of Russia seemed to be twofold. One, to sow discord in the U.S. and in Western democracies in general, and two, to stop Hillary Clinton, who they saw as a particular foe, from being elected. So they sought to help Bernie Sanders during the primaries, and they sought to help Donald Trump get elected during the general. Fair?
Yes, I agree with that, but I do think that the first part, that sowing discord part, is the bigger and the more important part, and that's why we saw these fake Russian social media accounts not only pretending to be conservative activists, but pretending to be activists for Black Lives Matter, pretending to be activists for Muslim Americans. So absolutely, they keyed in on Trump as the most disruptive possible force, because let's face it, he obviously is. But clearly the campaigns have a much broader intended goal, and I think that they achieved the broader intended goal. Whether they had anything to do with Trump getting elected, the Mueller report doesn't really say that, and I don't think there's really any way for us to know.
You don't think the Mueller report says that Trump was taking all the help Mueller can get? Trump was taking all the help that Russia could give, be it helping to disseminate the WikiLeaks releases of the DNC emails, or Trump Jr., as in the excerpt from the Mueller report I read, tweeting out some of the Internet Research Agency, this fake Russia propaganda, when they thought it would help the Trump campaign?
Clearly they were, but let's be clear, the Mueller report also says that media outlets were tweeting out these IRA social media accounts as if they were just regular Americans.
If the media was fooled.
The media was fooled. I mean, the Mueller report flat out says that there were multiple occasions when the media was putting these tweets out as if they were the opinion of some average American.
Correct.
When in fact they were coming out of this troll farm. I'm not disagreeing with your point about Trump seeking this help. What I'm saying is I don't think the Mueller report establishes that the reason Hillary Clinton lost the election had anything to do with this Russian interference. That's the thing that I just don't think we can ever know.
All right. One of the few Republicans to express publicly this weekend that they thought Trump's obstructive and collusive behavior were a serious breach is Senator Mitt Romney. He released a written statement that said, quote, and listeners, if you haven't heard this Romney statement yet, I wish you said it on mic so I could play you a clip, but I'm going to have to read it. Mitt Romney, I am sickened at the extent and pervasiveness of dishonesty and misdirection by individuals in the highest office of the land, including the president. I am also appalled that, among other things, fellow citizens working in a campaign for president welcomed help from Russia, including information that had been illegally obtained, that none of them acted to inform American law enforcement, and that the campaign chairman was actively promoting Russian interests in Ukraine. Reading the report is a sobering revelation of how far we have strayed from the aspirations and principles of the founders. That's what Mitt Romney wrote. So, Amelia from 538, you tweeted this about Romney's statement. Romney's description of the report collapses an important distinction. Mueller didn't conclude that evidence was insufficient for obstruction of justice. Barr made that call, but striking that he goes out of his way, that Romney does, to criticize the Trump campaign's willingness to accept Russian help. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so I think Romney's statement is interesting, that second part, because what we've heard so far from Republicans is mostly sort of measured responses wanting to say, okay, the investigation is over, let's move on. They haven't really been critical of the president. So Romney sort of going out of his way to say, you know, I'm really troubled by the fact that the Trump campaign seemed very willing to accept help from Russia during the 2016 campaign. That's quite noteworthy. On the other hand, one of the big findings from the Mueller report, and one of the reasons that I think a lot of the political response has focused on the president, is basically that Mueller said that he didn't come to a conclusion on whether the president had obstructed justice. And that was because he began from a position that charges could not be filed against a sitting president. And so he didn't sort of take the extra step of saying, okay, you know, I have all of this evidence, can I charge obstruction of justice? But he did say that he couldn't clear the president of obstruction of justice. And then he goes on to detail all of these instances where the president did intervene or try to intervene in the ongoing investigation. And so Mueller, you know, is really an unflattering portrait of the president that's being painted in the second half of the report. And Mueller didn't come out and say, I don't think charges shouldn't be filed. That was something that the attorney general concluded. So, you know, that's something that the Democrats are now having to grapple with, because we know obstruction of justice is, in theory, an impeachable offense. You don't have to worry now about sort of these questions about whether you can charge a sitting president. We're out of the realm of criminal law. But also, you know, there are these big questions for the Democrats about whether this is politically the thing they want to do. And so that's where we are now.
Right. So the Democrats will investigate further and maybe try to impeach. Bill Clinton was charged with obstruction in his impeachment of 1999. And here's what then a young congressman, Lindsey Graham, said at the time about the standard for how direct a president would have needed to be in order to be guilty of obstruction.
He doesn't have to say go lie for me to be a crime. You don't have to say let's obstruct justice for it to be a crime. You judge people on their conduct, not magic phrases.
Wow, Amelia, it sure sounds like Lindsey Graham was more of a hawk on what constitutes obstruction of justice, in fact, criminal obstruction of justice, than Robert Mueller turned out to be.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's sort of the challenge with impeachment, right? Is, I mean, so Robert Mueller was operating within the very sort of precise and relatively narrow frame of, you know, okay, this is what it takes to be able to charge someone with obstruction of justice, and this is, you know, the sort of evidence you need. And in the context of impeachment, the standards are just really very unclear. You know, it's not like in the Constitution there's a list of impeachable offenses and a sort of description of what it takes for a president to be impeached. A lot of it is about the political context and sort of the judgment of, is this president really sort of constituting a threat to the country? And is this something that the voters are going to get behind? And I think one of the things that the Democrats are grappling with right now is that, you know, Bill Clinton was impeached. He wasn't removed from office. There wasn't the sort of bipartisan political will to do that. And so, you know, I think there are concerns that even though some Democrats might say, you know, and are saying we have a moral and civic obligation to go forward with impeachment proceedings, if we think there is evidence to warrant impeachment proceedings, regardless of what sort of happens ultimately if the president is actually removed, there's also real risk of a backlash if the Democrats are perceived to be overreaching.
That's on the politics of it. David, I wonder for you, and you know, coming from your political position generally, are concern with the president's apparently obstructive behavior, like those instances of trying to get Don McGahn to do things, trying to get Corey Lewandowski to do things, Jeff Sessions to do things that would have been seen, as well as his firing of Comey and the things around that, like trying to get Rod Rosenstein to lie about the real reasons for firing Comey, which had centrally to do with the Russia investigation and Trump wanting that off his back. That seem like, oh my goodness, in a country where we value the rule of law, the president is doing these things. How concerned are you?
I'm concerned to some degree, but for better or worse, the American people elected a president who has the least experience with Washington, D.C., the government and the laws that surround it, maybe ever. So, you know, it reminds me of the first time I had lunch with a bunch of colleagues and people from other outlets down in D.C., and they asked for 12 separate checks for the 12 of us. And I said to them, you're crazy. In New York, you'd be banned from the restaurant. You can't do that. And they said, well, they're used to it here because there's so many strict rules about who's allowed to buy food for somebody else. And that made sense to me, but I never would have known it. Right now, that's a banal example. But it's apt because when Trump gets into the White House, he doesn't know this stuff. He says, well, my administration hired Mueller to be the investigator. I don't like what he's doing. Let's fire him. And so White House counsel Don McGahn says, well, Mr. President, you know, you can't do that. There's different rules. There's ethics. There's laws. And he really, especially among people in the conservative legal world, he's really come out as the White House's hero on this, as much as Trump seems to be annoyed at him. And yeah, I mean, Donald Trump wanted to do a whole bunch of stuff that was unethical, that was illegal. And his advisors and his lawyers said, no, you can't do that. Here's why you can't do that. I mean, that's what lawyers and advisors are for. So, yes, you know, it troubles me on some level. But on the other level, this is what the American people wanted. They didn't want another person coming in here who knew how to play all the rules, who knew how to dance right up to the line. And so I think we pretty much got what was voted for.
Dave in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with David Marcus from The Federalist and Amelia Thompson-DeVoe from 538. Hi, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Lair. Considering Mayor Giuliani was on TV yesterday saying, well, it's a good idea to take information from the Russians, do you think the Republicans should and would do this again in 2020?
Let me throw that to you, Dave, and maybe it makes sense to reframe the question a little bit, because you write in your article in The Federalist that you are concerned that Russia will try to do this in 2020, and you're concerned that neither the Democrats nor the Republicans in Washington are doing enough to stop them from doing it again in 2020, and you hope some good people on both sides get together. So take us there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a little bit of a mischaracterization of at least what I heard Mayor Giuliani say. I heard Mayor Giuliani say that this is not something that he would personally do, just out of, I believe he said, out of an abundance of caution. But he said that this was something that was not illegal. And, you know, there's big questions about that, right? I mean, the Hillary Clinton campaign, you know, got the Steele dossier from a foreign agent. Foreign agencies and foreign actors can interact with campaigns. So from a legal standpoint, I don't know that there's a lot of there. But yeah, to that broader point, I do hope that Congress and the Justice Department and the intelligence agencies are able to step up these efforts to try to punish bad foreign actors. And let's not kid ourselves, it's not just Russia. We're talking about Iran, we're talking about North Korea. It is very easy to attack us in this way, and we need some good people on both sides to get together and figure out what we're going to do about it.
By the way, we're getting some pushback from listeners, David, on your assertion that Trump being new to Washington just was naive in thinking he could fire the FBI director who was investigating him, fire the special counsel who is investigating him. Like, it's not the same as not knowing that everybody in Washington, for avoiding conflict of interest allegations, picks up their own check at a restaurant. You got to know, with Donald Trump's life experience, that if you're trying to fire somebody, if you do fire somebody in Comey's case, who's investigating your campaign because of concerns they have about behaviors they saw, that you're doing a dirty deed.
I don't know that he does have to know that. And I was speaking more specifically of Mueller than Comey. I think the Comey firing is more complicated. Clearly, there were people on both sides who didn't think great things about James Comey by the time the 2016 election was over. But in regard to Mueller, no. I mean, I think if Trump had decided to hire somebody to do an internal investigation of allegations on his golf course, and he didn't like what the guy was doing, Trump would say, I'm going to fire the guy and get somebody else. I think that's probably his mindset. And I don't know any reason why Donald Trump wouldn't know the ins and outs of legal fineries in Washington, D.C. I certainly didn't expect that he would.
We're almost out of time. Amelia, you wrote on 538, if this report has taught you anything, it's that Trump does not think about risk in a way that you understand. What did you mean, think about risk?
Oh, I mean, I think just that there are so many moments in this report where sort of the president seems to be thinking in kind of a short-term way about, you know, wanting to wrap up the investigation, wanting to get the investigation off his back, wanting to kind of, you know, apparently thinking that if he can just kind of get the spotlight off of him, then the investigation will sort of fade away and he'll no longer be in trouble. And of course, the broader risk is that if he had, for example, managed to actually get Mueller fired in sort of a repetition of the famous Nixon-era Saturday massacre, the risk to him would have been enormous. Throughout this report, we see him ordering his subordinates to do things that, if it had happened, you know, that this report could have been even more serious for him. So, you know, I guess I just didn't come out of the report sort of, you know, it seems like he has an understanding of wanting to get the heat off of him without perhaps thinking about what the long-term or downstream consequences will be, or maybe not caring about them.
Amelia Thompson DeVoe is a senior writer for 538. David Marcus is New York correspondent for The Federalist. Thank you both so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for having me.